Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and talk about it.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to another episode of the world's only Mad Men podcast. That's right. Of all of the podcasts about TV shows that exist, only us. Only we had the idea to do a show about Mad Men. So, if you see others in your local app store, they are lies. Don't click on them. Don't listen to them. Listen only to us and tell your friends and family about us. Give us 5 stars and a review. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed. And do all of that stuff. Isn't that right, Vince?
That's right. Yeah, you got to leave us a review. You got to leave us a good review to counteract some of the negative reviews that we've gotten lately. I feel like we've gotten review bombed by some bad reviews. And frankly, like, I don't think everyone that's writing those has been doing those sober. I think they're under the influence when they're writing those reviews. Yes,
I think you're right. I think they are.
You've crossed the border from lubricated to morose.
Absolutely. So stop getting drunk and writing sad things in our reviews. Give us 5 stars and a happy review. Also, patreon.com/Fraudcast. You can listen to these episodes a week early, as well as listen to a bonus episode with Fraudcast, me and Vince, and Fraudcast Brendan talking about things that are not Mad Men. Speaking of Mad Men, today we're talking about Mad Men from season 4, episode.
Great segue.
Thank you. Episode 6, Waldorf Stories. And we have a wonderful guest. Very happy to have him on. You may know him from a show called The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome to the podcast, Mr. Sam Cedar.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
I don't
even think that was a segue. It was, you didn't have to switch to anything.
Yeah, that's true.
He segued into the thing he was already talking about.
But I started with a segue-like sentence, which is, speaking of blank, and so it made it sound like a segue to those who are unfamiliar with the rules of segueing. You know
there
what
you
I mean?
Go. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. It's, but I imagine it's a great teachable moment.
It's a teaching moment for everyone who listens to know what segues sound like, even if
I'm gonna be playing this like in a presentation with my little laser pointer.
Oh yeah, someday when we're
room, like, don't do this. Don't see what he's doing.
Well,
here?
Well, I don't know. Do this. When someday we are all at our final jobs, which is teaching podcasts at community college. This is one of those things that we will teach. Sam, you do podcast, I guess.
I podcast.
Yes, I do. Your show is video plus audio podcast.
That's correct.
Thank you for coming on to ours. This is the first question I need to ask you, which is, what's your favorite advertisement?
Well, speaking of advertisements.
Oh, all right. Look at this.
You see
good
what I,
segue.
Wow.
That was a good segue.
That's how a pro does
that's
it, Matt.
Pro. Yeah. That's profesh.
In 15, 20 years of doing podcasting, that's what you will be able to.
It takes a while to learn how to do them that good.
Exactly. Yes, I came prepared for this, but actually, my favorite one, really the only one that I, there's two that I can remember.
Okay.
And the one that is my favorite is, I think it was called Mr. Microphone. Huh. By Ronco. Now, this is an ad from probably before when you guys were born. But it was from like the mid to late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a microphone that you could turn your radio to, and it would broadcast. The microphone would broadcast on your radio.
Oh, wow. You could take over the airwaves of your own house kind of thing.
Yes.
I see. Just for you, not for anyone else.
Not for anybody else. Or your car. And so there was like a famous line where there's a convertible driving by, some women walking by, and it was, hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later. That was the famous line.
Oh.
And then they all laughed. But it stuck out because... that technology just seemed so futuristic.
Yeah, that's magic technology.
Yeah,
that's crazy magic. Cool. The weird thing about radio technology, I worked at a radio station for a while, and it was obviously owned by iHeart, and they had this big iHeart conference that we all were forced to watch via live stream. And the guy who was, I don't know if he was the CEO of iHeart or whatnot, he was talking about radio technology in this way where he was mostly just mad that it had been invented too early. And he kept saying, if this technology had just been invented right now, it would be the hottest technology out there, better than internet, better than television. And I just, I realized, I was like, there is something magic about using the airwaves to make sounds. He's not wrong.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy. What's also sort of funny about that story, having worked, starting my audio career in radio,
mm-hmm.
The radio people were just absolutely incapable of understanding what the internet was.
Yes, right. And they were mad about it.
Mad about it because they were basically like, "This is I've been glad handing so many people for so many years,
right.
And it never occurred to me that this technology would go away.
Yeah, or that it would be relegated to some sort of
it's
antique status.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a business really anymore. And so I can understand why that guy was mad.
Yeah, but
it's still amazing. Soldiers on. It doesn't go away completely
somehow,
ever. It's just
somehow.
Like,
I don't know.
It's been overshadowed for 80 years now. And
it is the functional equivalent, though, of a restaurant where they stay open by buying leftover salad and lettuce from another restaurant and just serving it as if it's fresh. And people still come in. There's still some diehards who come in.
They're like, listen, it's 3 a.m. and you want a salad. Where else are you going to go?
Exactly. The 4-day old salad.
It's the dumpster diving of broadcast technology,
exactly.
Which is, that's beautiful. Here's that Mr. Microphone commercial, at least one of them from 1978.
Did you find it already?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, this Christmas party is getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone.
Hey, what's that?
Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and testing.
On the radio.
These kids are having a fabulous time with Mr. Microphone, the cordless microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around.
Oh, man.
Broadcast over any FM car radio.
You have to see it to understand how 70s this shit is.
Oh,
it is incredible.
I remember that. There's a guy with a boombox, right?
Yes. I just watched a black guy with a boombox dancing to him singing to himself over the radio, which is, useful.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Bingo.
You can broadcast in mono or with two more radios in stereo.
I love that meaningless distinction. You can broadcast in mono or stereo.
You can actually technically surround sound. They just didn't have a word for that yet.
They could do Dolby Digital. This is great.
Professional entertainers use Mr. Microphone for rehearsing.
No, they don't.
And you can too. It's practical and great fun for the whole family. And for only $12.88, they really make great Christmas gifts.
The perfect Christmas gift at Walgreens, Woolworth, Woolco, Osco, Venture, Weebolts, Montgomery Ward.
Wow.
Now, there's two things I should say.
Please.
One, that part about the musicians using it to practice. This ad was before you were not allowed to completely lie and defraud people on television. So that's why they could say that. And $12.88 was a lot of money back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could probably look that up, but I would imagine that's
that's probably $90.
$100 of today's dollars.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Also, 88 is such a weird number to land on for the, not 99, but 88.
We wouldn't trick you by doing 99. Everybody knows that trick by now.
And
we're going to switch it up.
And also, it's a little
too
close.
It's an extra 12 cents. This is not a 1 cent situation. This is 12 cents less than 13 bucks.
Also, it's a little too close to 1488, which is the white supremacist number for Heil Hitler and whatnot.
Actually,
so Please.
Mr. Microphone was how Hitler led his forces into Poland.
That was actually his nickname at the beer hall, Bush.
Guten Tag, it is me, DJ Hitler. Welcome to another day of blitzkrieging.
Lock the gates!
That's what they said to France, too. Hey, Hitler, can you be back to pick you up later?
Yes. Hello, what's the fuckers? What's the fuckettes? What's the fuckeronies? So, Sam, you've seen Mad Men, correct?
Oh.
Fuck.
Yes, of course. Of course I've seen it.
You wouldn't be the
first. I've seen it many times. I've seen it many, many times.
Yeah, I had heard that this is a show that you enjoy and actually do talk about. And I think it was Emma who told me, he's like, you got to get Sam on the podcast because this is a TV show he actually watches.
There's not, honestly, there has not been that many TV shows that I watch.
Interesting.
And Mad Men was, I mean, Mad Men came on in like a real golden era of television.
Yeah.
And it was like Mad Men. I feel like The Wire was happening around then and Sopranos. Yep. And
these are all the shows we have covered on this podcast. You just right. named them.
I mean, I think those are the only ones I've watched. And Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. So with Mad Men, was this, so it's a show that you watched as it was airing. Have you, you've done some rewatches of it before?
Yes. Yes.
What are your thoughts this time around?
Who are your guys? No.
Yeah, who are your guys on Mad Men?
I rewatched it during COVID. Mm. I watched it in real time. The one thing that really stuck with me the second time around was I was divorced the second time I watched it.
Mm.
I was not divorced the first time.
Yeah.
But it had occurred to me that divorce might be the thing to do that yeah. first time I watched it.
You learned about divorce from watching Mad Men.
Honestly, like, listen, if anybody knows my ex-wife, don't tell her I'm on the show.
That's fair.
Anybody
that's
who's
fair.
Listening. But...
No one's
but
listening,
I think
by the
I
way.
Watched it. Yeah, I think when I watched it, I remember the whole Betty. I can't remember.
Henry Francis.
Henry's, yeah, exchange. Both because I was interested in Henry because I was also, I think I was doing political talk radio at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, a guy from Albany. This is sort of interesting. But he had said to her something to the effect of, like, if you don't have any power now, wait. Until the moment's better, or something like that, and that, yeah. and she took that as advice in terms of to time when she wanted to leave Dawn,
right?
And I sort of felt like, oh, that stuck with me, and I didn't realize it until I rewatched it a couple of years after I'd gotten divorced.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's the only thing I remember of the whole show.
I mean. Their relationship is interesting too. In terms of my own rewatch, which is first time around, I was like, Betty sucks. Why is she, you know, why is she cheating on Dawn? That's not cool. And then at
what?
Some,
yeah, well, did you not see what had happened?
I was young. You know, it's weird because
Dawn was cool when he cheated.
Yeah, no, he did
bitch.
It. He did it, you know, in a cool guy way, not in some right. bitch way. No, but it
he never
like,
got caught, so it doesn't count, really.
He couldn't help it because he was drunk.
Right, yeah, he was drunk. Yes. And also, people are throwing themselves at him. Like, what are you going to do, you know? Mm-hmm. But this time around, I'm realizing that, you know, I maybe something that everyone else realized the first time around, which is that, you know, Betty is not at fault, and I don't blame her at all for the character that she becomes later on. I think Dawn destroyed her confidence and her life. And now I'm pro Betty. And I think Dawn might be bad guy, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think they were both very damaged individuals. And that's probably why they ended up with each other in that moment. And then they both sort of like went on their own trajectories from that.
That's true. That's true. And we'll get into more of that. But first, we need to, of course, play the theme song.
Mad yourself, man. Mad Men. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad Man. Mad Man. Mad Man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today we're talking about from season 4 of Mad Men, episode 6, Waldorf Stories. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Dawn and the agency are up for an award for their glow coat ad. Roger reflects on how he first met Dawn, and Peggy gets stripped for action, and an old young face returns to the fold.
Oh, all right. So those are the things. But Vince,
they had me until the very end. An old young face returns. Are they talking about Kenny? I guess.
Yeah. No, it's like I get where they're going with it, but old young.
That's just like you had a 3-item list, and then you just like tried to shoehorn Kenny Cosgrove in there? Why? Nobody cares about him.
I think, anyway. You know, to be fair, I did mark that down as the C-plot of this story. Mm. So they are right, you are wrong. But Vince, more importantly...
Yes, Matt?
What was happening at the time that this episode was set in?
That's right, Matt. We cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. We got to put some of that context back in. And we like to do that with a little segment that we call the News Machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Oh.
That's right. We're going all... This episode aired August 29th, 2010, which means we're going all the way back to August 29th, 1965, okay. The year this episode of Mad Men is set. You know, big things were happening. I feel like most of the stories that I read on this show, they sort of either fall into the category of quaint or horrifying.
I think this one's
mostly quaint. The headline, this is this is from the San Francisco Chronicle. Rated Resort Inn closed by owners.
Okay. Rated
Resort. East Hampton, New York. The swingingest discotheque in the elegant Hamptons resort area closed yesterday as a result of a raid on a narcotics party given by the club's band leader last Wednesday.
Hell yeah. Okay. Mm. Sick.
Yeah, they're partying. The Bulls, I like how that when people were doing drugs at a party, you could just burst in and shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. They had that in, I think, the previous episode or 2 episodes ago. Peggy is at a party, and it's like an art party or whatever, and she's hanging out with Joyce, who works at Life Magazine. And then the cops come in and raid it.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, for some reason, we still did, growing up, the same reaction when the cops came to a party. Like, you could be 23 years old, and if the cops came, everyone started running.
Yeah, it was just an ingrained reaction, because you're like, used to drinking on, you know, next to a... Well, in my case, next to a canal, but that might be different for people who lived in cities.
Yeah, yes.
I got busted for smoking a joint in New York City on the street.
That's great. What year, what age?
I was probably in my late 20s, and probably like the mid-90s.
Mid-90s?
It was after a comedy club. There was a bunch of comedians. We were out after, it was on Ludlow Street, and it was right when this comedy scene had started to happen there.
Yeah.
And
we got a couple of chuckleheads spilling out into the street here. I think one of them's smoking reefer.
They were in a cab.
What? The cops came out of a cab?
Yeah, there were 4 undercover cops, and they came out of a cab, and we were all 4 in a circle. Like, I'm trying to think who was there.
It's like a clown cop cab.
I had a court date with a guy named Ross Broccoli, who was actually in the other ad I was going to say. He did the Holiday Inn commercials back in the day.
Wait, is that the guy that was in Three Amigos? Isn't that guy's name Broccoli?
You say no. Ross Broccoli?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a comic, I assume.
He was a comic.
Sorry. And, that guy's name was actually Fred Asparagus. I don't know why. He's the big fat bartender in Three Amigos. Yeah, that's
it's close enough.
Yeah,
those two guys probably hated each other.
But yeah, so we got busted. So it was like very much that feel.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep,
that's
so
crazy.
So this piece has got some local color.
Mm-hmm.
The Bull's Head Inn, owned by Mrs. Frances K. Carpenter of a DuPont industrial family, closed before one of the Hamptons' biggest end-of-the-season periods. The inn is located in nearby Bridgehampton. Why look for trouble? Was inn manager Pat Hemingway's only comment. Guitar...
okay.
Yeah. Guitar player Emmett E. Boone III of New York, who headed a small musical combo at the inn, was one of 23 persons arrested in a raid on a house he had rented there. Boone was charged with selling narcotics and held in $500 bail for a hearing.
Damn, that's like $5,000.
That's a lot for...
That's crazy.
It must have been a lot of drugs. Elsewhere...
Good thing weed is legal now.
That's right.
And there's no way that the federal government can just decide to undo that at any moment. Love American drug policy.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah.
Elsewhere we got, it's LBJ's birthday. And well, it's not today, it wasn't his birthday, but it was at some point in the previous week.
It's his birth week.
It's his birth week. It's his birthday week.
Yeah.
And his daughter, the headline is Lucy Pens a Poem to Father.
Mm.
This is a poem by Lucy Baines Johnson to her father, LBJ.
Fuck yeah.
There are problems I can't understand that you must face each day. All the black and white in life is gone, and the remainder purely gray. Oh, I wish there'd be a problem that a mortal man could solve. Once again, to know satisfaction, black and white, hope and love. Though all the world is shaking at your door, you stand erect and calm. Knowing panic is man's enemy and control is balm. Though the presidency possess you, your private life you retain. Unending love for mom, sis, and me always has and will remain.
I knew remain was coming.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit more. Him's love affairs are your concern. Him, I don't know if that means God. I don't know. Uh-huh. Him's love affairs are your concern as the cattle and the land. They fill your heart, enrich your mind. Yes, you love and understand.
It's got to be so embarrassing to write a poem that rhymes.
How old is
yeah, yeah, yeah. How old was she?
She's
35.
No, she is, she's 18. 18.
18?
18?
Yeah.
18, and she's like.
I was going to say, that's a pretty precocious poem for an 11-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. too old for that poem.
Way but too 18. Old to be like, Papa, I don't understand the world. Like, you're 18 in the 60s. How? All right, fine. That's fine. It's cute.
Wow, that is.
We got a new. Sorry,
it's adorable. It's adorable.
It's very cute. Yeah, if she
adorable.
Was
adorable. I mean, of 11. I sort of feel like 18.
At 18 in 1965, to write a poem that rhymes is very funny to me. I don't know why. I guess.
It
could rhyme better.
Why don't get the rhyming part? Supposed to rhyme?
The rhyming wasn't bad. It was the fact that she had no meter.
Well, yeah, there was no meter, so you know, the bars were not fire, but the rhyming.
I just think the saying like there are problems that I don't understand. Like, well, I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, I mean,
tell me about the rabbits again, Pop.
Listen, it's all embarrassing, but for some reason, rhyming embarrasses me the most. I think it's because I'm imagining an adult sitting around. Trying to rhyme understand with land and just realizing there's a Dr. Seuss element, especially since like the 60s is like the beginning, well, not the beginnings, but this is at this point, people have stopped doing Dr. Seuss like poetry and have started, you know, writing poems that don't rhyme, right? I mean, I don't know. That's me. Maybe I'm just being a little bit of a snob. Maybe I'm a
genuinely flummoxed because I thought you had to rhyme your poems.
It's the law.
I think they should rhyme.
Like otherwise it's just, you're just talking.
Yeah. It's just a pile of dumb
it's
words.
Just
just noise.
A weird essay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what they are. You ever read a poem and just be like, oh, it doesn't rhyme, but they just put a word like in a random spot on the page and you're like, damn, that's crazy deep.
Yeah. What if you press enter in the middle of sentence?
I don't get it.
Poetry's deep. You guys just don't get it because you're not as smart as me.
Yeah, I do not get poetry. I'm
very smart.
I don't think people who know me are surprised by
that. No one's surprised.
No.
Elsewhere, we've got a new Miss America from Utah, and I was actually surprised by how tasteful this write-up was compared to other write-ups of beauty queens that we've had.
This is not our first beauty queen write-up. Most of them are just like, hubba, hubba, you, wowza, look at them
every
jugs.
Every day you had to write about a lady. Like, this was predated like the page five girl, but you still had to write about a lady so people could imagine her.
Pretty girl alert.
San Diego. Alice Buhner, a 34-year-old mother of six from Utah, was selected last night as the 1965 Miss America in the 27th annual pageant.
That's amazing.
The Salt Lake City brunette had placed first in the flower arranging event of the week-long household management competition.
All right, but for a moment, I thought it was like, that's good. There's not going to be a misogynist write-up. And then you realize, oh, no, the whole deal is misogyny.
She had to spend a week dusting.
It's just like, now we're doing the, you know, who nags the least competition. And it's just putting laundry all over the floor and seeing if someone complains. First person to complain loses the crown.
This is the asking about you segment.
Mm-hmm.
The 5'6" Mrs. Buhner has children ranging in age from 7 months to 10 years. Her husband, Donald, is a businessman.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That relates.
Yeah. Finally, I think you guys are going to like this one. This one got some direct parallels to today. Headline. This is from the Miami Herald. Bobby's son hurt in fall, 100 stitches.
Okay.
Hyannis, Massachusetts. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., 11-year-old son of New York Senator Robert F. Kennedy, was recovering Saturday in Cape Cod Hospital from a severe leg cut that required 100 stitches.
Wow.
A family spokesperson said young Robert fell off the roof of a garage behind his father's home at Kennedy Compound Friday. His leg pierced a garage window as he fell, the spokesman said.
Boy. That was the beginning of my aversion to getting the jab. My leg was jabbed by a window pane.
It was just the beginning. He got some jabs after that.
I was trying to spy on a pretty lady. We had a relationship from afar and I slipped. The boy was taken to the emergency department of the hospital in a Barnstable, Massachusetts police cruiser and was treated by family physician Dr. Robert D. Watt. A tendon was cut in the fall, the spokesman said.
Oh, geez.
Earlier this summer, young Robert was bitten by a Portuguese man of war while swimming.
All of this tracks.
Senator and Mrs. Kennedy arrived at the hospital shortly after the accident. They and their other eight children left for New York early Saturday, the spokesman said. The family spokesman said young Robert would remain in Cape Cod Hospital for a few days.
They just
left his ass there.
I'm going to have to Google Portuguese man of war.
This
is a fish, right?
Jellyfish.
It's a big jellyfish.
Okay, all right. That's were they in Portugal or this is just...
Hyannis. It's Hyannis in Barnstable. I'm from Massachusetts.
No, they just call them Portuguese because they're not very smart and they'll sting you.
Oh, yes. Just like the old stereotype of the Portuguese that we're all aware of. Back then, they had like ethnic whites that we don't even know about these days. They got slurs for things that don't even exist. That's crazy, man.
That is funny. You know, I used to do a radio show with Kennedy.
What? Which Kennedy? Bobby?
With Bobby Kennedy.
With Robert Kennedy? What was that radio show?
It was called Ring of Fire. It was it was on Air America, and then they went independent.
Right.
And I think the last episode I did with him was like in 2016 or 17.
Whoa, that's insane. I had no clue. So did he ever talk about that time that he was stung by a Portuguese man of war?
There was a lot of times where it would be like, We weren't friends per se. I mean, we were friendly, but I would never see him. It was all there was no Zoom. It was just audio.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this, but I feel like radio would not be his medium for some reason.
Well, that was the thing. That was a little bit of a hurdle for people.
Entrance.
And he would do interviews and I would do interviews and the producer would stitch them. So we weren't necessarily going back and forth. Although there was one time, when CNN released that stuff where he's going, you know, like, Donald Trump's a fascist.
Right.
You could hear it like a half a second of me at the end of that clip going, okay, well, that's, I couldn't have said better. Or something to that effect.
Wow. But
there were times where it was just like, you know, we would do some, like, occasionally an intro or something like that, and the producer would be like, he's late because he was trying to release a sea turtle from a net off the coast of the Cape.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, look, okay. This guy has kept himself busy for so long.
And I was just trying to saw its head off.
I wanted to see if I could actually survive in the belly of a whale. I fed on his marrow. I do love that he at one point did the radio, probably because people were like, well, he's a Kennedy and, you know, what are we going to, what are you tell him?
He was not obvious. I mean, his politics have changed rather dramatically.
Yes, clearly.
It was like a progressive radio show.
Right.
And his politics have changed pretty dramatically. And people were excited that he was a Kennedy, and he did some back when he believed that environmentalism's not a hoax.
Right, right, right.
That he did some pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
But it was, there were occasionally where we would get emails saying like, how can you
is there a filter?
Have this guy on the radio?
Yeah. Is there a filter we could use to make it like some sort of reverse chorus effect that'll make his voice sound regular?
Yeah.
There was an NPR affiliate around here when I was growing up. And one day a week they would have this guy who had like a pretty like moderate to severe case of cerebral palsy read the news.
Right, right.
And I was like, I get what you guys are doing here, but I don't think this is necessarily
That's the thing. Some people can handle it, and then some people can't. I feel like, listen, whoever wants to do radio, audio, you know, go ahead and do it. That being said, when someone's voice is grating, it's usually, for me, that's
hard
a non-starter.
To listen to. It's almost breaker, definitionally grating.
Yes, yeah, by definition, yes.
Speaking of a grating voice, it's grating when that voice is grating.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Good segue.
Great segue.
Thank you for segueing.
You went that direction.
I think his voice was probably in slightly better shape. I mean, he has a sort of a degenerative situation with his...
Right, it's getting worse.
It's getting worse, and he would take some type of medication for it. Now I think it's just he takes testosterone for it.
And that'll definitely work. I'm just imagining...
It's expanded his neck, so it's supposedly bringing a little more bass into
it. Well, that's good. Sure. I love a good warbly bass sound. He's like dubstep. I do love that he decided to go into radio, probably because he bought himself a Mr. Microphone and said, hey, nice. Look at that. See, I made it tie all together. So that is all of the context that we need.
I'll be back to pick you up later.
Yeah. Hey, ladies, I have some poems I'm going to write you, just like I wrote to Olivia Nuzzi.
Oh, my God.
I want to dive into your mouth like Alka-Seltzer. Yeah,
I already blocked that stuff out of my head. I forgot about that. It was disturbing.
I read that every morning like they're fucking...
The cure for the common trollop.
But before we get into this episode, I, of course, have to play a little bit of the Draper D story.
My favorite part.
Apologies up front. This is me reusing a song that I did from the Wire, but I'm doing the original version and not the version by the band Disturbed. Here is a little bit of this week's Draper D story.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Sorry to use this song again, because Breakfast on Draper's, night and day drinking. Makes rash decisions while he was sleeping. An idea that was planted in his brain from Jane's cousin. And that's the sound of striving.
Danny
Siegel's got one job.
All right, so there's more to that, of course, but that is the sound of striving.
That's beautiful.
You can hear the rest of the full song parody synopsis of a one episode of Mad Men at the very end of the episode. We're talking a lot about striving. This is an episode, I think, that is about the ways in which ambitious people are able to succeed because the person who can give them the thing they want is blackout drunk. I very much enjoyed this episode. Vince, your initial thoughts, please.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is all about the tension between Don being very proud of his creative work as an ad man, all while knowing deep down that the whole industry is kind of bullshit, driven by clients who don't know their ass from their elbow, an accounts network that runs almost entirely on cronyism. Meanwhile, he's gotten to the top of the mountain, only to realize that there's really nothing up there except the resentment of his peers. he loves it, but he hates it, and so he drinks. Meanwhile, he's doing sort of like the Max Fisher thing from Rushmore, where he just keeps having to shout, I wrote a hit play!
Right, right.
And yeah. So he deserves to get drunk. I mean, it's always a little less fun to watch a guy crash out than it is to watch him, you know, just carouse and have a good time. But great episode overall. I think there's a lot of that Mad Men jazz scatty dialogue that I didn't really like necessarily understand at first, but I think this time around it works. It's harder to understand, harder to parse at first, but I don't think they're trying to confuse you as they are in some of the earlier episodes.
Yeah, in the previous episodes.
Anyway, solid episode.
Sam, initial thoughts on this episode?
My thoughts were similar to yours, but I saw like there was a the atrophy of like those who have in power and the sort of like the cycle of churning essentially, but also you know I can't remember now the name of the two Draper's sort of like mentee and
Roger Sterling.
No. That's his mentor. What's her name?
Peggy.
Peggy. And that other dude. I always watch Stan Rizzo, the least corny name. TV and never know the names of the characters. By look.
Yeah, just call him Elizabeth Moss. And
She is asserting herself, and it's like sort of cross. It has more implications, obviously, than just the sort of like Don outsmarting Roger,
Ted Shaw,
new kid,
the little guy,
outsmarting, you know, outsmarting or overcoming Don on some level. She's like, I think it's also representative of like what's happening in terms of like women's liberation and
right. whatnot.
So I found it really interesting because it's a lot about power, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they keep giving Don shorter and shorter foils. Like two episodes from now, they're gonna find him. Gonna find him a guy he hates who's just like Warwick Davis.
Child?
Or something.
No legs.
Yeah.
No
yeah,
legs.
Yeah, yeah. It was really fun for me to watch the whole Danny Siegel. That's the little guy's name. The Danny Siegel arc in the story because.
The names in this episode, by the way, a little bit on the nose. There's Danny Siegel, Clarence Birdsong, and Stan Rizzo.
Wait, who was like, Clarence Birdsong?
He's the guy that Kenny Cosgrove is like friends with, or I think his last name is Birdsong, and he's the one that Pete thinks is.
He runs Bird's Eye, right? This is the client that that Kenny has, and he's going to bring back to Sterling Cooper, Draper Price after they hire him.
Bird's Eye was a real brand.
Yeah, that is still a real. I bought some frozen peas from Bird's Eye a couple days ago, and man,
I'm really committed to this.
They tasted like shit. Mm-hmm. I don't
That's
know.
Weird because usually you like pee in your mouth.
Listen, you son of a bitch, you piece of shit. I really loved the Danny Siegel stuff, especially because of the way it contrasted his storyline and Dawn's storyline, because there's all these parallels between both of them, right? So you have both of these people who desperately want this job, and they're talking to someone who is a gatekeeper, someone who's, you know, powerful and can get them the job that they want. Dawn actually has talent. Danny does not have talent, but he has the exact same sort of striver mentality. So they decided to make him the opposite of Dawn, in that he has no talent and he's the littlest man you've ever seen. And it's just opening.
He's also an insider. Like Dawn's, right. You know, the central thing is that he sort of had to.
He has no family connections.
Yeah, he has no family connections, exactly.
Right, yeah. And I just love that, you know, I love when the foil is a little man. There's just something about that where it's like, you know, it brings me back to a time where you could make fun of short men before, you know, the whole short king lobby started smearing everyone as height supremacist. And it's also like he is a Siegel. So he is because Jane is Jewish. So he's like a little Jewish guy. And I just there's something about the way in which Dawn interacts with any Jewish character that is. It's just this undercurrent of anti-Semitism, even though it doesn't actually have to say anything.
I guess I didn't
anything.
Even register that he was Jewish until right now, because I just, like, I don't know. He was, like, too unclever for me to think of as, like, a
I love
as Jewish. Which is, like, reverse
You're like,
racist,
no, he wasn't scheming enough. It's like, I didn't even know he was Jewish. He wasn't holding a globe.
He didn't even lend any money.
Yeah. He barely rubbed his palms together.
But yeah, it's a great character, and the opening scene of this episode is just really great. It's super funny. This is him pitching his one idea to Dawn and Peggy.
Lazy Boy, the cure for the common chair. Budweiser, the cure for the common beer. Manufacturers Hanover Bank, cure for the common bank. How about Alka-Seltzer, the cure for the common cold?
The cure for the common cold is the idiom I'm playing off.
It's an idiom. Did you know that?
Just the way that Don Draper says, "Did you know that?" to Peggy, in the just the most, he's just, it's so condescending and it's just so sarcastic. I love the way he interacts with this dude.
I also like the button to the scene where
he tells him that he's like, I'm hungry.
Well, no, not that's that a, part.
I love
that's
that.
A great that's a great button for sure. No, that's that is the actual button. It's like the pre button where Siegel says something like, "Oh, I thought you were going to say something else." And I feel like it's this thing that Mad Men does, which is very hard to do in writing, where you sort of write an interaction that doesn't make sense on purpose. Like, it's right. Very hard to get away with writing an interaction that, like, doesn't make sense deliberately, because it just usually it just confuses the audience. They don't know what the intention was. But, like, in that one, it's like the intention is very clear that, like, this guy makes everyone feel awkward and you don't want him around, because it's like having this two ships passing in the night kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just like a good little moment there.
Yeah, he says to him something, you know, Dawn says, you know, thanks for coming in or something. And he goes, what was that? Sorry, you trailed off.
Yeah, it's like, no, I didn't, you shit.
He says he trailed off because he was so desperately hoping for the next sentence to be, you're hired.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, a function of, like, his nerve. Chutzpah, as he might say. Like,
yes.
You would never, ever say that unless you've had some sense of entitlement.
Yes.
That came from thinking, like, I've got this made because Roger is my relative. And so everybody here is already sort of working for me.
Yes. Yeah. He has, like, chutzpah, and also he's not the best at social graces. So it's the perfect combination for Don Draper to hate this man with every fiber of his being.
And but I think Don also thought it was a joke during that whole time. So he's like, prank.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
He asked if he was on Candid Camera, which was very funny. And right before that, Danny goes, is there, you know, some place good to eat around here? And he goes, ask my secretary. And then you hear just faintly, well, I don't work for you.
Yeah.
Knowing Miss Blankenship, the secretary is going to not enjoy this little boy asking for something.
There's also like this undercurrent that goes through the whole episode of like this tension between like the boomers, like Stan Rizzo, who are kind of, and Stan Rizzo and Siegel, where they have this like sort of dilettantish, they're just like sort of dilettantish shitheads. And of course, like the Dons and Rogers and all the like people who lived through wars hate them.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the first time we're introduced to both of these people. This is Stan Rizzo's first episode. He's the art director who's going to remain with us throughout the entirety of the show. And then you have Danny Siegel, who I think sticks around for a while.
They got rid of Sal, so they're like, we need another Italian who's horny.
Well, I didn't even register that he was Italian because he wasn't doing mafia crimes. And so, like, I didn't know he was that until just now. And I also forgot that this is how we were introduced to this guy, because you kind of, if you've watched
just threw
the show
him in there.
Well, if you watched the show before, you remember him as being a beardo. You know, he had like a beard.
Oh, I didn't even remember he was there before.
Yeah, he's like half hippie. He's he works there, he does art, and he seems like kind of a nice guy. He smokes a lot of weed in the later seasons. In this one, our introduction to this dude is, I fucking hate this guy. He's the most misogynist character they've had so far in a show filled with misogynist characters. It's really shocking. I totally forgot that this is what he was like. But this is just a collection of all the things that Stan says to Peggy throughout this episode.
Well, all the girls are gone. What do you want? You got a rag? No, Toots, grab a pencil.
Why don't you write down my ideas?
Look, I've read your brochure. I have no interest in the temperance movement.
I bet he takes you hunting and lets you carry the carcasses in your mouth. I know you're ashamed of your body. You should be, at least. You win.
Win what?
Win the prize for the smuggest bitch in the world.
Just any other character who has been misogynist, it's come with, I don't know, it's like a baseline. It's almost like part of like who they are. So you can't, you don't feel it as much.
It's like, usually coming from a place of more authority, where he's just kind of like doing it from the back of the class
The misogyny in the show is structural.
Yes, largely, exactly.
And so nobody has to be to perform. But that's the thing. That's why I think like that's what I was talking about. That relationship is tracking what's happening in society more.
Yeah.
Where there is not, you don't have, it's she's superseding the structural, because he comes in and she is more senior than him at the firm, at least just because of her tenure. And I think that's why he starts to like verbalize the misogyny, as opposed to it just being structural and this is just the way it is. Like, I don't have to ask you to go get coffee just because, of course, you're getting me coffee.
It's also, it shows why they call it reactionary, because it's like he's responding to the fact that he doesn't have that position of automatic power. And so it's like he's reacting to it by trying to like assert it in this prejudiced way, instead of
it's a know
like,
your place type thing.
Exactly.
And it comes off as so much worse than when like Freddie Rumsen from like, you know, earlier episodes, he's super misogynistic, but they just call it old fashioned because his entire thing, interactions with Betty, is about, you know, trying to sell whatever product they were trying to sell. And her strategy was like, oh, no, women like makeup because they like to, the you know, process
but
and feel
he
good.
He also
and
does get more misogynist as he loses his position authority
right.
as well.
Yeah, that's, of course, that is, you know, I think that's what happens. That's why you see, you know, anytime there's progress, there's 1,000 screaming guys. but with Freddie, like, his whole thing was a structural sort of misogyny, which was just like, listen, we all know that all women want in life is to get married. So for some reason, it's like it feels less offensive because it seems to come from just like, you almost feel sorry for him. Like, oh, this poor old schmuck, he's, you know, stuck in his ways.
Where it comes from a place of assumption rather than like an assertion.
It's yeah.
Like, it's he's making an assumption, whereas like Stan Rizzo's trying to like
assert
this thing where he's like, no, you stop being such a smug bitch because you're beneath me.
I also think, Matt, you have to assess your assessment based upon through the lens of you thinking that Betty was out of line for cheating on Don.
That's mm-hmm. true. That's mm-hmm. a good point. But, you know,
you should start this by
we all live, we all learn.
And
we live and learn.
Doing a land acknowledgement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am going to assess it now through the lens of knowing that Stan is Italian. And that's how they be. just a sort of a backwards people. Isn't that right, mm-hmm. Vince Mancini?
That's right. That's right. As I like to say, in the French version of Looney Tunes, Pepe Le Pew is Italian. So...
It is real and it's wonderful. So just going through this storyline. Oh, no. Is it producer Brent?
Yeah, it's that time. It's time for ads.
Okay. Really? All right, everyone. Well, this is a show about people who make advertisements and we, of course, play them in the middle of it. So everyone, please listen to these ads. Also, just FYI, the ICE ads have been removed. I don't know if we were responsible for that, but they have been removed. They have been replaced with ads to join the CIA. So do not join the CIA. I will reach out to our host to try to get those removed. But for
unless
now,
you're planning to change it from the inside,
yeah.
In which case,
case, go for it. You can absolutely change
that.
It from the inside.
Yeah, you, it could be you.
Yes, yeah, you'll be the guy. You'll be the one who figures it out. So listen to these ads. Don't join the CIA, and we'll be right back.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man here with Sam Cedar. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing well.
Oh,
I've learned a lot today.
Oh, yes. We've learned about Jews and Italians and the 60s.
Yes. Both of those things.
We finally learned.
Mountain Dew, cure for the common Havana syndrome.
What? That was the ad they just heard. Okay.
Yeah, do you guys really have ice ads running on this?
Everybody did. Everybody on Spotify. I think,
yeah, like, apparently Spotify was doing a bunch of ice ads.
We don't let them put ads on our show, I don't think.
Yeah.
Or maybe we do.
That's the thing. It's like if you allow dynamic insertion of ads, they can
do whatever.
Well, then you're good. See?
Our show is a daily show, so nobody cares. Like five days later, we can't sell
ads. And you get
ads.
To do ad reads. Because you have people who listen to your show.
Yes. And so I get to read the ads for ICE.
So that's even better. Yeah, listen, we've been reaching out to ICE. Please let us read an ad, for fuck's sake.
They got so much money.
They have all the money. Okay, so we were talking about Peggy and Stan. I mean, this storyline is weaved throughout, so I'll just like give the basis of it. But essentially, Peggy is working with Stan for the first time. When we first see Stan, he is showing Megan and another secretary named Clara a Barry Goldwater attack ad that didn't air, in which it was the KKK basically saying that they were against all the things they were against. And I just thought this was a really funny little scene because Stan was showing it off as if it was impressive. And Peggy points out to Clara that the fact that it didn't air means it's less impressive. And they're getting together because they need to come up with an idea for Vic's cough drops. So throughout this episode, we see them working together. Stan is being misogynist. Peggy is mostly complaining to Stan about how how she's not getting credit for the glow coat ad that Dawn is about to win a Clio for. And this is a theme that is mirrored with Roger. Roger spends this episode mostly, you know, celebrating with Dawn, but also sad that Dawn is the one who gets all the credit for glow coat when he was the one who discovered Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it's really an interesting, I guess. It's an interesting storyline to see because you see it plays through flashbacks. You have the way that Roger perceives his involvement in Dawn's rise, and then you see the flashback in which Roger is literally doing everything in his power to not hire Dawn.
Yeah.
And it's just funny how he remembers it.
It's also sort of doing a thing with the handoff of eras too, which is like the Roger's struggling to write this book. He's struggling to like tell his own story because he comes from an era where like you don't talk about your background. It's like you just sort of show up fully formed and that's like what you want. And now they're entering this era of like personal branding and like mythology.
Right.
And like he's struggling to create it. And so all of his excerpts for the book that he's trying to write are about like why his mom wouldn't let him eat chocolate ice cream and and like different, just like the most mundane. It's like the stuff that people who have never written nonfiction, like that's what they think like the memoir is. It's
right.
Like, oh, you know, you just talk about what type of ice cream you like and shit.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminds me of, I was listening to a book review of Gavin Newsom's recent memoir that has come out. And yeah, so Gavin Newsom he's out there pitching his memoir or like promoing it. And it's all very embarrassing. I think that's where.
Really ghostwritten by this Fresno writer who's like very good. And I was like shocked to learn that that was his ghostwriter. But anyway, yeah.
Wait, what? It's not you.
No, it's Mark Arax. No, this guy, Mark Arax, who's like, you know, one of the only good writers to come out of Fresno in the last.
Other than you.
Yes, exactly. Other than me. I'm glad you said it, Matt.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you're pretty good for an Italian, but it reminded me of I was just listening to the interview and this mythologizing of your own childhood to try to make it sound modern or to try
like
to appeal
more
to a
agency.
Yes. But appeal to a modern audience like Gavin Newsom's entire, biography up until, you know, the last, I don't know, decade or so. In San Francisco, he was pitched as, look at this rich, connected guy who's friends with the Gettys.
Yeah.
And in his book, he's just like, No, I was actually really stupid and poor, and I just, you know, I worked really hard, but I was raised by a single mother. Well, no, I had a father, but he just was like kind of emotionally unavailable, and just like after a while, you're just like, who is this for? Now, in, right, yeah. In Gavin's case, it's for all of the rubes out there who are going to buy whatever he's selling about himself. In this case, it's Roger is doing this mostly so that his legacy will be attached to something. I think he wants to attach himself to more than just being the son of a guy who started the company he works at.
It's the same thing, though, with between yeah. both those guys. They both want to make it feel like they did something. It's the agency yes. thing.
Yes.
I had to overcome a lot of stuff to get here. Like, my mother wouldn't let me have chocolate ice cream because I would drip it on my
$1,000 couch. Yeah.
I remember when George Herbert Walker Bush yeah. was running against Dukakis in 1988, mm-hmm. and they were trying, and he had that problem with the, I can't remember if the grocery store thing where he was amazed by the
how much an apple cost
reader.
Barcode
reader.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made it clear like he never went shopping.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that happened in 92 or 88, but nevertheless, they were trying to make him be a regular guy. And so they deployed his sister, who had this famous quote I remember where she said, we were raised like everybody else by strict parents. If we left our tennis rackets out in the rain, we got punished.
We were not supposed to leave those on the court we had in our backyard.
It's the same thing. Like they all like he's trying to make it sound like he was oppressed by his mom,
right?
Because of the ice cream was going to stain his clothes and couldn't have a real childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And Gavin Newsom's out there going like, "I'm a regular guy. I got a 960 on my SATs." Except for no regular guy at age 50 remembers what their SAT score is.
100%. Yes. Yeah. Him remembering.
Or whether they took them. I mean. Yeah. My God.
And also, side note, in the exact same interview, Gavin tells everyone he doesn't know how to read. And I love taking this to the extreme where you're just like, I'm literally the dumbest man alive.
Yeah.
Right, guys?
At first, I wasn't even allowed to drive a car. My dad had to bribe the test taker.
I'm legally blind and deaf.
Yeah.
According
to the state of California, I'm actually mentally disabled.
Yeah, right. But anyway, so this is,
it's funny to think about the George Bush thing, because fast forward to now and like Trump, my favorite thing about him is his obsession with the word groceries. Like he just learned it 2 years ago and he keeps saying it like it's like a mythical incantation that he just learned. He's like, they have this word, groceries. It's a beautiful word.
New word.
An old-fashioned word.
Oh, yeah, old-fashioned. That's what he
says. It means things that you buy at a store.
Talk about like the difference Riz makes. Because like he's literally, showcasing to everyone that he doesn't buy groceries by how impressed he is with the word groceries. He hasn't had to think about food in terms of groceries his entire life. And that's crystal clear when he talks about this. And yet he has so much Riz that he is able to make all of the rubes go like, ah, yeah, he's just like us. Yeah. So anyways, so that is what's going on with Roger throughout this episode is him, trying to rewrite his own history. Meanwhile, the flashbacks are doing him dirty. So you see Dawn and Roger are at a fur coat shop, and Dawn is selling Roger a fur coat. Let's see. Roger was
that he's buying for his mistress.
That he's buying for his mistress, and
who is Joan?
Yes, we later find out is Joan. And Roger looks at this one ad and asks, "Oh, who does your work?" And Dawn says, "I do." And in that moment, Roger hands him a business card. Dawn thinks, "Oh, wow, what a serendipitous thing that has just happened." And Roger says, "No, this is because I have very specific instructions on how my wife cannot find out about this." And it's just so clear that you see like the reality of the situation, which Dawn was able to get this job just by being persistent
And lying
and
blackmailing
And yeah. blackmailing. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It was the booze and the sort of like, he grabbed whatever power he could over Roger, which yeah. was, I know that you're cheating on your wife.
Right, and yeah.
I could easily screw up those directions.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But I won't, because I am also drunk.
Yes, and I will do a similar thing in this very episode. yeah, he like does everything he can. He like puts his book in the fur coat case, which Roger does not appreciate. He shows up at Roger's job, stalks him in the lobby, and pretends to be taking a meeting, which Roger immediately calls him out on. And Don is like, yeah, okay, I'm not actually here to take some random meeting. I'm here to see you, but please give me a break. He invites Roger out for a drink. They drink and they talk, they laugh, they go into a taxi together. And in the very last scene in this episode, Don shows up in the lobby again, but this time he's like, he says he works for him because he...
Remember when you said I was hired when you were blacked out drunk?
Yeah. Okay, so here's my question. Is that a lie?
Yeah, it was a lie.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm uncertain. I'm uncertain about that.
I don't think we're meant to know. I don't think it makes a difference. I think
right.
the idea is that it's possible, very yeah. possible he blacked out, and it's very possible that Don lied.
Yeah, which I love not knowing that, and I love thinking that it's possible Don lied about that. But yeah, it was interesting because, you know, you see the parallel with Danny, who after they win the Clio, Roger and Don go back to the office for their meeting with Life Cereal. And in that meeting,
the meme, the
famous
meme.
Iconic meme, Don is pitching and they don't like his, you know, was it grab life by the bowlful or eat mm-hmm. life by the bowlful? And he decides to pitch some other ideas rapid fire to them. And here's
how about life is just a bowl of Life Cereal. Life is sweet. Enjoy the rest of your life. Cereal.
Don, they're not expecting you to do this right now.
Give me a second. Life. The reason to get out of bed in the morning. Life. The cure for the common breakfast. Life. Its sweetness never ends. Life. Eat it by the bowlful.
Oh, there you go. Cure for the common breakfast. That dog will hunt. Wonderful.
I can keep going.
I love Don saying I can keep going because he's just like really enjoying pitching to them. But in that moment,
how many mediocre 80s comedians got a leg up in the industry from this exact situation with Robin Williams just fucking getting up there?
I know.
Doing rapid fire jokes and being like, oh shit,
yeah,
I gotta pay that guy for that one,
right? But yeah, that's true. This is like the Dane Cook story. it's Dane Cook just taking jokes from people. But yeah, because of the fact that he stole this joke or stole this bit, he's blacked out drunk. Peggy tells him, hey, you have to like do something about it. And he tries to pay Danny off. He's like, I'll give you $100. And Danny's like, please, no, I want a job. And he doubles it. He's like, I'll give you $100. Danny refuses once again. And so he's forced to then hire him. So I kind of assumed that, you know, a blackout stupor had something to do with both of them getting their jobs. But mm-hmm. it's possible that Don was lying about that, which would be fucking awesome and good for him.
I mean, I think it's a blackout stupor that responsible either way, whether he was lying or not.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Don has the same, like he's doing the Max Fisher thing. He's like, you know, he's thinking he's cock of the walk because he's just won this Clio and mm-hmm. he's treating everyone like they should, you know, participate in his victory lap. And then there's like this time lapse scene where he goes from, you know, this attractive woman at the bar to waking up with Doris. And God, I always want to be, I always want to know like what the casting meeting was like.
Thought.
It was like, listen. You're going to play this character. It's like a girl. It's like the girl that you don't want to wake up next to, you know,
yeah.
Where you look over and you're just like, ugh, yeah. What did I do?
Oh no, bro. Ew.
Anyway, that's going to be you. Like, I think you're perfect for this role.
I had that exact thought when the time lapse, he's, you know, he's making out with a hot woman. cut to
thought Doris was attractive.
Me too. That was the thing.
No,
I
think he's just confused. Honestly, I think he's just confused. And,
right.
And I mean, he and it's obvious he also went somewhere and picked up the waitress.
Right. Yeah. He we don't know when or where or what happened with it. We just know that he was so blackout drunk that he's next to a brand new woman. But I do
think fast forwarded through an entire day.
Yes. But I do think that the subtext of it is, ew, what if you woke up next to someone who was a total butterface? Like that was the like sort of the joke, or if not the joke, but the implication of the scene,
it was
which I thought
idiom
was
they were playing off.
That
of,
was yeah. Oh, an mm-hmm. idiom. Mm-hmm. Wow, did you know that? but yeah, Doris is a waitress, and he wakes up next to her. He has missed out on picking up his kids. He has missed out on calls. Everything for him has gone just completely blank. And he then, in the next scene, drinks again, falls asleep for another 8 hours, which is really impressive. And then the episode ends with both you have Peggy and Stan, who Peggy gets over on Stan by telling, you know, calling his bluff and saying, I'll work naked with you. And Stan can't stop having a boner. So that for some reason that just beats Stan into submission, I guess, because he's just embarrassed to, I guess his claim was, I work better in the nude and that's when all the ideas flow. And instead he's just horny the whole time and looking at her titties, which causes him to call her a bitch. and it ends with Roger giving the Clio back to Dawn and saying, before I give it to you, can you just say I couldn't have done it without you? And Dawn essentially is like, oh shit, I didn't say that, my bad. And then they, you know, high five and start making out. and then we see as it turns out, he's half right and half wrong. He couldn't have done it without him because Roger is the one who was stupid enough to hire him while he was blackout drunk. But also he did do it without him, because by sheer force of will, Don was able to get this guy to either believe that he had hired him while blackout drunk or actually got him to hire him while blackout drunk. So, yeah, it's
I also it's like great. The wrinkle that, like, as proud as Don is of this award, he's like, you know, he's super stoked to win it. He's like receiving the respect of his peers. This is like this big symbol for him. But it's also like screwing him over, because now when he pitches things, everybody's knock on him is going to be like, I don't know, this seems a little artsy from you, Mr. like award winner.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that in future episodes. Last thoughts, Sam, is there something you really liked, something you didn't like, or something that we haven't touched on that you would really like to talk about?
No, I thought it was, I really enjoyed that episode. I mean, it's weird because I haven't watched the series since like 2021 or 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And to drop right in the middle of, without really any context, it was fun. I may actually watch the series again.
You should. It's a good show. It's a good show to watch. And Vince, something we favored, least favored, or something we didn't talk about?
Yeah, a couple of moments. There was a couple of moments with the Don's new secretary. I forget her name, but, you know, obviously the greatest new character this episode. There's the one where it's at the very end of the episode where he opens the door and Dick Siegel's in there and she comes over the intercom and says, your little friend is waiting.
Yes. And then yes, I enjoyed
there was
that.
Also another moment that I missed the first time I watched is like, it's just in the foreground. It's like a visual joke. And mm-hmm. she's sitting there and she's reading the want ads with a magnifying glass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that her trying to get another job?
Yes. Yes, it was. It's very subtle, very good.
Oh, it's so good. One moment that we didn't delve too deeply into that I just need to say was great was it really is a meme-worthy scene when Dawn pitches to Life Cereal.
Yeah, I got this one. I got it. I'm spitballing here.
Yeah, yeah. Just we all know it from the meme where he's like standing there next to the presentation poster or whatever, and he's clearly drunk out of his gourd. And I had forgotten how the scene goes down. I knew that he was drunk, but I wasn't sure if it was like, does it go well? Does it not go well? What I love about the scene is this is him pitching it.
So, Life Cereal. Delicious. Crispy. And it's got a big name, you know. There are sweeter cereals than this. But I kept thinking about, you know, nostalgia. How you remember something in the past and it feels good, but it's a little bit painful. Like when you were a kid.
That's the truth.
And life, that's a scary word to anyone at any age. So how do we make it fun? Eat life by the bowlful. Little kid, big bowl, big spoon.
There's something about little kid, big bowl, big spoon that just like, just the quickness of him summing up like, this is the thing that's going to sell it is going to be, oh, look at how little this kid is next to this big bowl and big spoon. What I enjoy about it is he's just come off of this big win, at the Cleos. He's drunk and he's celebrating. And he finds out the life people are back, and he's like, no, I want to do this pitch even though I'm drunk as shit. And
yeah, I'm good at this. I can do this. I don't need to do homework. I can just riff because I'm the award
winner. Because I'm the shit.
Now.
I'm holding an award for how good I am. He shows up. They don't like what they have, and he decides to just like randomly spitball some ideas because he's chasing that high of being genius. Because he's like, well, no, I came in here in order to have another win on top of my win. And I'm not leaving till I get that. And there's just something about the like addict nature of that that I thought was really good. And
I also like that. And this is just a great thing about John Hamm, where his hair always functions as like the drunkenness indicator. You can tell just by like they managed to make it just mussy enough in this where it's like still in place, but you can tell he's like getting a little bit shit faced.
Right. Yeah. It's so good. All right. And if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, you know what? I'd give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Tough choice. I'm going to go solid B+.
Oh my God. That's a shocker. Sam Cedar, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
88 is not a letter grade, is it?
It's not, but if I
think that translates to like around a probably a B+.
Whoa. It's a high B. It's definitely a high, yeah, okay.
Guys, we're at B+, B+, B+. It is a B+ episode of Mad Men. And you know what? I'm going to say an A+++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Sam Cedar, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
My pleasure, guys. That was really fun.
Absolutely. Where can people find you and watch you regularly?
The Majority Report.
Yeah.
On YouTube or wherever your podcasts are served. And we're live every day, noon.
Yeah.
Eastern.
It's a great show. And
sometimes.
No, I love it.
It's 5 days a week. We get some shows that aren't so great.
I watch it in clips. You know, I'm is there a clip? And then I watch the clip. And, you know, usually it's when my wife is on, but also sometimes when my wife's not on. But Sam, thank you so much. Oh, and also, what's the name of the show you did with RFK Jr.? Is that still around?
We don't need to talk about it.
Okay, all right. No. Never mind. We won't plug that. Sam, thank you so much for coming on. Really enjoyed having you.
Thanks, guys.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/Frontcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Yes, you get a prep school name. Who doesn't want that? Everyone wants that. And this week, three people want that. Vince, do you have your... what is it, a turban?
Yeah, I'm putting on my prep school turban.
Okay. Well, we have three names. All of them are dudes, probably. I don't know. Dude names. So let's rock and roll. First one is William Harrigan.
William Harrigan? More like William Harrigan. We call this guy the Shrew.
That's good. There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, that
thank
was you. Great. Next is Nathan Danger.
Ooh, wouldn't want to be around this guy. Yeah. Oh, We get fraught with this guy.
Yeah.
Fraught with danger.
We're
calling him Scary Spice.
Oh, okay. Have we done that? We've never done that. I don't think so either. Scary Spice, the 50s prep school name we all know and recognize. And lastly, it is Brandon Rainville.
Oh, hi. My name's Brandon.
Hey, I'm Brandon from Rainville.
My name's Brandon. I'm from Rainville.
First time, long time. I'm Brandon from Rainville. I just want to say, cut it out, Rain.
We're calling this guy Twilight because it sounds like he lives in Rainsville, aka Forks, Washington, where there's no sunlight, and so vampires can live
there.
That's
right. That's right. This is a Twilight movie reference, and I like it. Those are the names we have this week, and you can get yourself a name. You can pod yourself a shout-out by joining the $8 tier or more. Patreon.com/Frotcast. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. If one of those concerns might be, hey, I haven't heard my shout out yet. Well, let us know. Frotcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Sorry to use this song again, because Don Draper's night and day drinking makes rash decisions while he was sleeping. An idea that was planted in his brain from Jane's cousin, and that's the sound of striving. Danny Siegel's got one joke, the cure for the common cold. Don humiliates this little man, tells Roger he will not hire him, and then Roger Sterling flashes back to when he met Don, became Armstrong, and touched the sound driving. Draper's people wake Leo's, a drunk pitch to life cereal. Draper talking without speaking, Draper pitching without listening, Draper saying slogans that Danny Siegel shared. He's not aware striving. Fool said, Peggy, do you know? You stole that from Dan Siegel. Took his words and he lied to you. That's just something that I've heard you do. Peggy's words like silent raindrops fell. Bullies her into silence. Don and Roger drink all day, can't remember what they say. Roger learns Don is his employee, it is his first day he's onboarding, and the signs say Siegel and Don Draper got jobs cause of alcohol. Blacked out all in the shade and the sounds of striving.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. I got it.
Oh, we're having fun.